All right. All right. So for this episode, it's the first chapter of The Hobbit. Come on. We're way past that. How you been?
Been good, Patrick. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Anything new happen since the last one?
Can't say all that much.
All right, cool. Then we could just start. All right, so for this episode, it's the first chapter of The Hobbit. Come on, we're way past that. It's the first chapter of The Fellowship, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, Book 1, Long Expected Party.
At long last. The much awaited episode.
This is the big time. This is the big time.
Mm-hmm.
Though I think we did a good job with the foreword and the prologue.
Yes.
Okay. But anyways, here we go. Today we'll talk about just hobbits in general, because now instead of just hearing about hobbits and only knowing one hobbit, we actually get to see them and how they interact and stuff for basically a whole chapter. We'll talk about the iconic party scene. We'll talk about Bilbo and Gandalf's parting. And we'll talk about Frodo a little bit afterwards. And then we will dive into a little bit the first drafts of this chapter, because it's very interesting to see. And we have the notes for how much of Lord of the Rings evolved over from 1937 to about 1951, even to like 1954 when it was finally published. But yeah, so.
Okay, very interesting.
Cool, but before all that, we get to get back to Cliff's notes. Bring it on.
Yes, indeed.
Let's do it.
So, the peculiar Bilbo Baggins has reached the ripe old age of 111, while his adopted nephew Frodo is turning 33, which happens to be the Hobbit's coming of age. They decide to throw a big party. Although the gossipy and adventure-averse Hobbits have their suspicions and doubts about Bilbo and his intentions, everyone does love a good party. Gandalf shows up with fireworks, dwarves bring gifts for the children. In the midst of his speech at the end of the night, Bilbo slips on his magic ring and disappears, leaving hundreds of hobbits confused and shouting. Meanwhile, he slips back to his hobbit hole, where he runs into Gandalf. After a brief altercation with Gandalf about leaving the ring behind, Bilbo finally sets out. We don't really know where. Frodo returns to receive the magic ring and has the unsavory task of giving away a few gifts to family members who invade his house in search of rumored hidden treasure from Bilbo's previous adventures.
Nice. Well done, Clifford. Well done.
Thank you. So,
I guess we're going to kind of go a little bit chronological this episode, but hobbits, just in general. We start off at a bar. I think it's the inn at Bywater. Is that it?
Yeah, sounds familiar.
That might be the Green Dragon itself, if you watch the movies, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so just your thoughts on hobbits. What do you think of them?
I mean, we talked a bit in the last episode about seeming like kind of rural Englishmen or something like that. They're sitting around at the pub gossiping with each other. They're a little bit ignorant of the outside world, as we noted before. That said, they're pretty good natured. They're a bit suspicious of Bilbo, it seems. That comes up again and again. But communal.
At this point too, though, being suspicious of Bilbo, it's like he is 111. Like, the average age was the 100, but not only is he 111, which is super old, he looks like he's 50.
Right. So something's weird about him. And supposedly he's got all this treasure that he brought back from his adventures, which we know from reading The Hobbit was a bit of treasure, but not all that much.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't get over how big of gossips they all were. Even the Gamgees, mm-hmm. who eventually become, you know, really good people. But I mean,
They're the gardeners for the Baggins.
Yeah, every single one of them is a gossip, like hardcore. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of funny, but it's also like annoying.
Right.
But yeah, and then and they're very gluttonous. very gluttonous people. I don't know. I guess those are two negative takeaways from Hobbits. Everything else about it is pretty cool, but
yeah, I get the sense it's kind of a very humble setup. They're just some casual rural folk, but there's definitely a little bit of tension at play. Like, certainly people have their eyes on Bilbo's inheritance.
Yeah, and what you're saying about Simple too, it's like, you know, their topic of conversation is the crazy old guy in the neighborhood, or, you know, the weather.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
what you would expect for, like, you know, small town news.
Yeah, country. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I don't know. Do we have more on Hobbits besides that?
Not particularly. Bilbo's the outlier. We start to learn he's got a sizable family. He's got relations. He's on good terms with them, except for the Saxville Baggins, who just sound like they suck.
Yeah, I wrote that. Yeah, Saxville Baggins suck.
But he's on good terms with his family. That said, he's a bachelor. He's got no kids.
Well, he has an heir, though.
But he does have an heir because he's adopted Frodo. Frodo was the child of his cousins, basically.
Yeah, but what happened to them?
They drowned, which was also a topic of gossip in the pub.
Yeah.
So Frodo will be inheriting his supposed fortune. Everyone's a little bit gossipy about that.
And the Saxville Bagginses were supposed to. That's why they hate Bilbo.
Right.
Yeah. Did have it, but then he showed up, you know, back from The Hobbit, because they were about to get it that day. But yeah.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Bilbo, I don't know. So Gandalf shows up, Bilbo's planning a party, and, like, the party sounds interesting. You know, like, that is the talk of everybody for, like, the preceding weeks leading up to it, because...
Right.
You know, and everything's happening at Bag End.
Mm-hmm. Point being, he's a bit weird, but he's certainly part of the community around him.
Yeah.
So this party.
So yeah, was the talk of the town. Everybody's pumped for it. Sounds like everybody's going, even if
we get hints that Bilbo's been planning this for a long time.
Yeah, and there's, like, an extremely teasing conversation between Gandalf and Bilbo that Bilbo's got a plan hatched.
Mm-hmm. He's going forward with it.
Yeah, and Gandalf hopes it goes well.
Yes.
So we know that. And then the party itself sounds like a fun time. Kind of, like, it reminds me of, like a super fun, big, huge block party in the summer, you know?
Yeah. Big circus tent set up, fireworks.
Imagine the best block party you've ever been to, and then times it by five, and then that's probably this party.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And plentiful food.
Yes. For scale, for the special dinner, for the VIP guests that Bilbo invites into the main tent for a dinner where he's speaking, that's 144 people that get invited. So... that if you've got 144 VIPs, it's a sizable party.
Yeah.
But anyways, Bilbo starts... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, my favorite part was the fireworks, the excerpt of that. I almost think it's worth the read. You want to take it?
The fireworks were by Gandalf. They were not only brought by him, but designed and made by him. And the special effects, set pieces, and flights of rockets were let off by him. But there was also a generous distribution of squibs, crackers... Baccarat wrappers, sparklers, torches, dwarf candles, elf fountains, goblin barkers, and thunderclaps. They were all superb. The art of Gandalf improved with age. There were rockets like a flight of scintillating birds singing with sweet voices. There were green trees with trunks of dark smoke. Their leaves opened like a whole spring unfolding in a moment. And their shining branches dropped glowing flowers upon the astonished hobbits, disappearing with a sweet scent just before they touched their upturned faces. There were fountains of butterflies that flew glittering into the trees. There were pillars of colored fires that rose and turned into eagles, or sailing ships, or a phalanx of flying swans. There was a red thunderstorm and a shower of yellow rain. There was a forest of silver spears that sprang suddenly into the air with a yell like an embattled army, and came down again into the water with a hiss like 100 hot snakes. And there was also one last surprise, in honor of Bilbo. It startled the hobbits exceedingly, as Gandalf intended. The lights went out. A great smoke went up. It shaped itself like a mountain seen in the distance, and began to glow at the summit. It spouted green and scarlet flames. out flew a golden, red-golden dragon. Not life-size, but terribly lifelike. Fire came from his jaws, his eyes glared down. There was a roar, and he whizzed three times over the heads of the crowd. They all ducked, and many fell flat on their faces. The dragon passed like an express train, turned a somersault, and burst over Bywater with a deafening explosion. Sounds like quite the fireworks show.
That is, yeah. And, like, Tolkien's descriptions throughout that, I mean, it's like, how do you come up with those thoughts of, like, fireworks? I'm not saying how, but it's just like, yeah, you're just the best at this. This is what you do best. Like, yeah. This is why I'm partial to you as my favorite author. Thought that was worth the read. Mm-hmm. I'll also say, too, I thought the movie did a good job with the dragon part in there. You know, I thought that was fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is better.
It reminds me both of the movie. They did a good job with the fireworks, but also I think it's in the first couple scenes when Bilbo is smoking his pipe with Gandalf.
Yeah, that wasn't technically a scene, but yeah, that scene was.
And Bilbo's blowing smoke rings, and then Gandalf blows a ship made out of smoke through Bilbo's smoke ring. It's kind of this setting where it's like kind of believable and then has this fantastical, impossible dimension that gives everything that like magical glow, you know?
Yeah, I think that additional scene in the movie, yeah, that was a good touch by Peter Jackson, and it fit pretty well with that description there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The actual party itself, I'd also say the movie did a good job with this speech too.
Yeah.
I don't think it's word for word, but
it's a bit awkward. It sounds like Bilbo's stepping back and forth, and starts out welcoming everyone, and there's cheers, and then his words get a little bit jumbled.
How about that one line? Should we go over that?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know half of you half as well as I should like, and I like less than half of you half as well as you deserve. Do you understand that? Did you work?
I did not understand it upon hearing it first time, but I worked it out a little bit, and I think it is actually a compliment of sorts, or an apology for being.
Yeah, it's both. Yeah, yeah. I think if you translate half into 50%, like, so I don't know. I would just read it. I don't know 50% of you, so half of you,
mm-hmm.
times 0.5, so, you know, like half as well as I should like. I guess that is half. You know, there's no other way to say that. But 50% of the people there, he wants to know them twice as much.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, or just a figure of speech. He should know them better.
Right. And I like less than half of you, so less than 50%. So somewhere between 0% and 50%. Mm-hmm. So like, mm-hmm. So let's just assume like a quarter of the audience. I only like you half as much as you deserve. So it's like, mm-hmm. I should like you more. I'm sorry, I don't.
Yes. In other words, though, there's a bunch of you who I don't know all that well, and I wish I knew you better. And there's a bunch of you that I don't like you, or I owe you more, pretty much. Or I guess you could also read it. There's a bunch of you that I like less than you deserve. In other words, I don't like you, but you're still a good person.
Yeah, and he doesn't really, well, I don't know. He doesn't even say he's sorry. He doesn't. It's just like, oh, right. You deserve more, but I'm not giving it to you. So.
Right. He's reinforcing certainly the quirkiness that everyone views him for.
Yeah, maybe that is an apology, though. Oh, well, yeah. So, but the rest of the speech, obviously, I don't know. Nobody wants it to go on, but he does keep it short, and he surprises them all by disappearing using what?
The magic ring, of course, which we know from The Hobbit.
Right, yeah, it turns you invisible. But there was a flash there, which is kind of interesting. But we find out later that was just Gandalf. Yeah, and that's kind of the... He's never seen again in Hobbiton. Besides that, the only thing I think we should cover about the party was that Hobbits do the unique thing of giving away gifts on their birthday instead of receiving them.
Yes.
Which is cool. It's cool. It's a nice tradition.
I did like that.
Yeah. That also brings up this is the deal. When you do notes for the show, it's like, this is exactly why I read all these books. And this is the kind of, what I'm about to say, this is why you should read letters of J.R.R. Tolkien, because there's goofy stuff like this just mixed in there in just his letters. And admittedly, right. This is my favorite one of all of it. So I'm kind of like spoiling like what I think's the best thing in there. But so there's this one quote in one of the letters, because he's like, after Lord of the Rings is published, fans are like writing him letters, just asking him questions all about stuff like Gondor, or who's the king, or like whatever, you know. And so like they're asking him about like Hobbit customs with birthday presents. And so like sometimes he'll answer just like, if he knows it's a child, he'll answer real nice, like as if he's writing The Hobbit. But then sometimes it'll be like he can tell it's an adult who's super into this stuff, and so he'll go back to like the prologue academic kind of voice, and he makes it sound as if he's just the recorder, the translator, or bringing out like the history. It's not like he invented any of this concepts and stuff, which is funny. So, right. So he's saying, so this is just a quote from one of the letters they sent to a fan. It's like, and just also just to think to like get a letter from that guy like answered. It's like, right. I mean, that would be a family heirloom for me.
Right.
You know, it should be for everybody that has one. If you're out there, you keep hold of that.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but anyways, this is the reference to 12-mile cousins. So, in the Shire etiquette, at the date of the party, expectation of receiving was limited to second cousins or nearer kin and to the residents within 12 miles. Even close friends, if unrelated, were not expected to give, though they might. So that's in reference to giving out presents on your birthday. So you had to give them out to your cousins within the second degree, basically.
Right.
And they have to live within 12 miles. And so after the 12 miles part, he puts this asterisk, and you got to go like to the footnote at the bottom of the page. So there's a footnote in this letter, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, these are all handwritten, you know.
Right.
I don't know anybody that makes like a footnote on a handwritten letter.
Yeah, of course.
All right, but anyways, here's the footnote. Hence the expression, a 12-mile cousin for a person who stickled for the law and recognized no obligation beyond its precise interpretation. One who would give you no present if the distance from his doorstep to yours was not under 12 miles, according to his own measurement.
So the 12-mile cousin is the one who's not going to give you a present if you live 12.1 miles away.
Yeah, and they're the stickler about it, yeah.
Right, okay. That's pretty funny.
That, again, it's like that just all adds to the depth of this. I think we actually forgot to talk about it in the prologue. That's what all the names do. They add, like, depth to this. Like, it makes it feel real, you know? I mean, we're already establishing that. But now he even, like, he goes so far as, like, in a footnote to a letter that one fan would get, he's got a description of, you know, like, well, you know, we got 12-mile cousins up here. You know, like, he has, like, insults, you know. Like, he's got, like, this whole universe created down to the T of that. 12-mile cousins, like everybody knows one, you know, and it's like, I don't even know what that would relate to here. It's like somebody that just doesn't tip or gives the exact amount on the tip, you know,
so,
like, yeah, which only, I don't know, I guess most people don't even tip in the world, so only Americans would know that, you know, but that one's just funny, but it's also an example of the depths he goes to create a real feel of this universe. Which, again, is, you know, it totally passes my, I don't know, real analysis meter.
Explain.
Other fantasy series, I don't think they go into as much depth as this. And I think that's why I don't really like it. You know, like, this one just passes it all. It sounds like, you know, it's so, there's so much to it that it does sound like the real history. And I think that's why I like it, too.
Right.
And so far we got his descriptions of like stuff like fireworks, and I think we've read some like landscape ones, and we'll read some more landscape ones. And then, you know, the details here, like those are the two of the things that really make Tolkien awesome, at least for me. But probably everybody would say that, you know. It's like this feels real, as opposed to, I don't know, pick any other fantasy series, and it's like, doesn't feel as real, you know. It just seems like it just doesn't do it for me.
Right. I think a big part of that is like the plausibility of a lot of it, like or the relatability at least.
Yeah.
He's always, even with this magical stuff, he's always weaving in these elements of familiarity, like even for these quasi magical creatures that we have no familiarity with, their in-laws are kind of wacky and you know, their neighbors gossip about them and their cousins are concerned about their will, that type of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Hobbits are pretty close to, like, modern stuff, but, like, everything, though, he's the best at, and he's the best in position as, like, a philologist studying history. He's the best in position to keep the perfect balance of it, you know?
Right.
Let's do the most important scene of the chapter.
So, Bilbo returns to his house. He's packing up to go. Gandalf shows up and is like, nice one you pulled out there, pretty much. But as Bilbo's on his way out the door, Gandalf says, are you leaving everything behind, including the ring?
I think we should kind of just really dive into this too, like just go blow for blow. So mm-hmm. I got them written down here. How about you interrupt me? I got a couple of spots where I just want to stop and talk a little bit, but you interrupt me whenever you hear something too.
Okay.
Yeah. So like you were saying, Bilbo is packing stuff up. He packs the ring in an envelope, and he's going to mm-hmm. leave it for Frodo on the mantelpiece, but he instinctively puts it in his pocket instead. So ring's
right.
in the pocket.
Or rather, he has it in his pocket right from the party.
Right, but when
he had worn it.
But he takes it out to put it in an envelope. And he was supposed to put it on the mantelpiece, but he doesn't. He puts the whole envelope with the ring in it in his pocket.
Okay.
Gandalf comes in. Bilbo says he wants like a permanent holiday, and then he's got that conversation where he's like, "I feel thin, you know, like butter stretched over too much bread." You know, everybody kind of knows that one. All right, because mm-hmm. they've seen the movie. Okay, Bilbo's leaving everything to Frodo, including the ring. He thinks it's on the mantelpiece, but then he realizes it's in his pocket. So Bilbo considers keeping the ring. And Gandalf urges him to leave it behind, which my question is, like, why is this Gandalf's default position? Just to assume, like, hey, you should just give it away.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense, but, like why do you think that would be his default position?
So it's we haven't actually heard, but we get the suggestion that Gandalf has been maybe researching this ring a little bit. He's like...
He doesn't actually... He's been worried about it for the entire time that Bilbo's had it, but...
Not researching, he's thinking about it at least. It's on his mind, and he has this suspicion that it's a pretty important thing, but he doesn't really know why yet, right?
Well, he just thinks all magic rings are important at this point. I think what you're saying is, like, in the future.
Gandalf has a suspicion that this does more than just make you invisible. There's some power to it.
Well, that's true of all magic rings, but yes.
Okay, fair. So... Gandalf is like, you know, this thing might be kind of important. And Bilbo is effectively retiring, going off to disappear. We don't know where. And we get the suggestion that, like, Bilbo is, he's leaving the story.
Maybe, you know? Maybe Gandalf, I was just thinking this, maybe Gandalf is also aware that, like, Bilbo looks really good for his age, and hobbits shouldn't mm-hmm. be this old, you know?
Yeah. It's like, it's a not necessarily a healthy thing for Bilbo.
Yeah.
And
so he kind of just instinctively knows that by default.
Right. And in the same, I view it similarly to Gandalf showing up at Bilbo's door at the start of The Hobbit and saying, "You're the one. You're going on this adventure." Bilbo's like, "Are you kidding me? This is nuts." Ends up doing it, and it ends up being a very good thing for Bilbo. But Gandalf had this suspicion or vision or something, that intuition, that Bilbo is the person for this job. And he needs to be pulled out of his comfort zone. And I feel like this is a similar situation where Gandalf has this intuition that it's time for Bilbo to move on, and it's time for Frodo to step into the scene.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, so from there, Bilbo gets very defensive, wondering why Gandalf's always interested in the ring. Like he's, mm-hmm. like we were just saying, it's probably because Gandalf's interested in any magical ring, because that's his business. Which Gandalf right. then says. He says he has a professional interest, needs to know where the ring will be. Bilbo's had it for a while. Bilbo becomes very defensive and possessive. Gandalf says, "Cool down." Bilbo calls it the precious, which is like, you know, well, at that
direct
point, yeah,
reference to Gollum.
Right. Gandalf's super alarmed because this sounds like Gollum.
Mm-hmm.
Bilbo then says he decides to keep it. And Gandalf says, "Bilbo, you will be a fool if you keep this. You are way too obsessed with this. You got to let it go and be free."
Right. Okay?
And then Bilbo says, "I'll do whatever I want." So at mm-hmm. this point, I start to note, it's like, all right, when you just say that, that sounds like, you know, you're a free person, you can do what you want. But when you say that, it's like, that's not real freedom at this point. Like, you're going to do what, as we'll kind of see, like, you know, the ring wants you to do. The ring would want you to keep it, you know? So it's like, so you're actually giving your freedom away to something else to be, you know, that you're obsessed with. That's anything, mm-hmm. you know, like whether it's a ring, it could be, you know, it's cell phones at this point in this day and age. I mean, like,
sure. Yeah. I mean, this is Gandalf giving Bilbo like an addiction intervention, right?
Right. Yeah, for
like,
sure.
You need to move on, Bilbo. No, I'm not ready for that. I mean, that's kind of what's going on here. So in that sense, like regardless of what the ring is doing, I think Gandalf recognizes that whatever positive effects this has on Bilbo, like giving him old age and invisibility when he wants it,
yeah,
it might also be a destructive thing for him.
Right. Yeah. So Gandalf says, please do as you promised for our friendship's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was like kind of interesting because it's like you're trying to ask him to do this for you. But well, whatever. We'll just keep going. Bilbo says, no, you want the ring. And he even puts his hand on his sword. Gandalf then does like that classic, like the menacing fill in the shadow, you know, shadow fills the room and he starts like, you know.
Right. He like is possessed. Yeah. Not necessarily it's almost possessed.
I mean, it's definitely intimidating.
Right. But he opens a window to another side of himself.
Right. Yeah. And say. So once that starts up, then Bilbo starts calming down, but he's like questioning like, well, why can't I keep it? You know, I mean, I can, right? And Gandalf's like, well, I'm trying to help you here. And Bilbo says, sorry. And he even admits it'd be a relief to be rid of it. It feels like something's watching him, wants to protect it, needs it on his person at all times, which again is like, okay, really? You don't have ultimate freedom right now if you're saying stuff like that. If you're saying somebody's watching you and you want to get rid of it, but you also want to protect it. I mean, yeah, like that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Gandalf says, well, give it up and I'll look after Frodo to make sure he takes care of it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So Bilbo kind of agrees that was the point of the party, and Gandalf agrees with that because he's like, yeah, this whole thing was like way too extravagant for my taste, but I could understand it so long as you actually do this. Like, this was the whole point was, yes, get rid of this ring. Everything else too, but like especially this ring. Like, that's why Gandalf is on board with the whole plan. So Bilbo's about to walk out with the ring, but Gandalf reminds him it's in his pocket. Bilbo offers it to Gandalf, but Gandalf says no, put it on the mantle, which is kind of interesting. Gandalf doesn't want to like have it near him.
Right, touch it. Which is goes well to for his insistence that he doesn't want it himself. He wants Bilbo to give it to Frodo. It's, I think, a good thing that he doesn't take it.
Yeah, agreed. And then Bilbo hesitates. He accidentally drops the packet, so the envelope with the ring, on the floor. And before he can pick it up, Gandalf picks it up and... Yeah, Gandalf picks it up. And so when Gandalf picks it up, Bilbo is about to spaz out with anger, but then that quickly passes, and then he feels relieved and laughs.
Right.
Relieves and laughs. So, comments on that scene?
So certainly this is like the most tension we've seen so far. Most character development, perhaps.
Have we seen anything like this in The Hobbit before?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, Bilbo, despite all of his challenges and his development as a character... became wise to the world throughout The Hobbit, but remained kind of happy-go-lucky for a lot of the story. Maybe a hardened than happy-go-lucky, but he's never... Like, this suggests that he's, like, possessed by this ring, or that he's really addicted to it, which is uncharacteristic for the way that he is throughout The Hobbit. So I'd say that's a distinct change. And then... in terms of Gandalf pressuring him, it's not unlike the start of The Hobbit, where, as we were just saying, Gandalf seems to have some intuition that Bilbo is the right man for the job and pushes Bilbo to go against his will. This certainly feels like a sharper confrontation between them, though.
I think it was clear from The Hobbit, and like in that little conversation too, he had said, like, well, magical rings are part of my professional job as like a wizard. I'm supposed to worry about big things like that. And it's been fine that you've had it. But then, like, he was very alarmed when he calls it the precious, you know, and it sounds like Gollum. And so, you know, now he's, like, super alarmed, which is interesting because Gandalf's like, whoa, I haven't noticed that, even though I've known you've had this for 60 years, you know. I mean, it's like, that's a big deal. Like, you know, because maybe he just thought, like, Gollum was just a weirdo, which he is, like, permanently. But he's like, whoa, now that's coming on Bilbo. Uh-oh. Now it's definitely like, well, now you definitely got to get rid of this. But it's interesting that Gandalf, I mean, he knew the ring was powerful, like it was a ring of power, but he didn't know like how powerful or whatnot. And so now it's like he's alarmed by that. And it's, as we see, he basically leaves abruptly at the end of the chapter. And this is, it's not explicitly stated, but it's because he wants to find out more about this ring, basically, you know.
Right, right.
And then was he too controlling? Yeah, I had almost thought that, but you know, the real answer to that is like, well, if Gandalf wasn't there, Bilbo would not have been able to give up the ring. Like if Gandalf wasn't there, Bilbo would have taken the ring and walked off, and then that wouldn't have been good. So yeah, so this kind of did. I mean, Gandalf needed that to happen, and he was working, like you said, like he just knows kind of from intuition, like this was like the right thing that needs to happen, and he made it happen. And Bilbo is, and it's also important to note that Bilbo did give it up himself. Like he was the one that took it out of his own hands, dropped it on the floor, you know, and just left.
And then, and acknowledged at the end that it felt like the right thing to do.
Yep. And he was happy about it, relieved and laughs.
Right. He doesn't appear to have any regrets right now.
Yeah. After that, he leaves. The only thing, he leaves and there's that song, The Road Goes Ever On, that's kind of famous. From the, yeah.
Can I read it?
Yeah, might as well. Yeah.
Okay.
The road goes ever on and on, down from the door which began. Now far ahead the road is gone, and I must follow it, if I can. Pursuing it with eager feet until it joins some larger way, where many paths and errands meet. And whither then, I cannot say.
Where it began, that was that's a reference to The Hobbit, I guess, you know, because it started at the door when Gandalf and the dwarves knocked, you know.
Right.
Came for the tea party. But, yeah, other than that, I don't really have too much to say on it at this point, but I think we'll eventually come back to the song.
So,
yeah. Let's see. Next topic. Well, Frodo comes back, and basically he's the master of Bag End. Bilbo left a bunch of gifts for everybody, and Frodo has to distribute them the next day. But I don't know. What do we think of Frodo and Bilbo? Because, like, Frodo didn't really have a good introduction, if you ask me.
No.
Like, they gossiped about how his parents died. And then he laughs.
We know that Bilbo
He laughs when Bilbo disappears. And then he comes back right after Bilbo leaves and starts talking to Gandalf. And he's good buds with Gandalf.
Yeah. And we know he says he misses Bilbo very much. He wishes he could follow him out the door. Doesn't want to worry about all this stuff.
But there wasn't even a line where they talked to each other.
Right, right. And we heard reference that Bilbo took Frodo under his wing because he's his favorite cousin.
And Frodo even wanted to go with him, but Bilbo was basically like, I don't think he's really actually ready.
Right, right.
Which is, it's all interesting, but it's like, I don't know. It seems a little bit of a, all important to know too, and all interesting, but I think it's a missed opportunity that they didn't have a scene talking together. But there might be a reason for that, which would kind of just take us into the last topic, I'd say, for tonight. So the cool thing, so the last thing that we're going to talk about tonight is the original drafts of this chapter. I think we discussed before, there's like the whole 12 volume histories of Middle Earth thing. Like it goes like, you know, after you read Lord of the Rings, you're going to read the Silmarillion, then you're going to read the Unfinished Tales, and then since those two are successful enough, or by some standards, extremely successful. Christopher Tolkien started going through all of his dad's notes, and he compiled the histories of Middle-earth, which are like, that basically kind of goes through his notes and like unfinished drafts of everything.
Right.
Basically for his like whole life, from like 1917 to when he died in 1973. Volumes 6 through 9 are the drafts for Lord of the Rings. And so it's actually interesting because he has like he was handwriting a lot of drafts, so then he saved them all too, and he never dated any of them, or he didn't date many of them.
This is Tolkien.
Yeah, Tolkien. But he left them all there, and so Christopher Tolkien, his son, took the time, and it must have just been such a pain in the butt to do this. He took the time to, you know, figure out. Well, this was the first. This had to have been the first draft, and this was the second draft. And he probably wrote this at this time based on this letter that he sent out to this guy here. And then we were lucky, like this letter has a date, you know, or this draft has a date on it, you know. And so he basically kind of goes back and compiles everything, so we get like a good evolution of how Lord of the Rings took shape in the late 30s, throughout all of the 40s, and then to publishing in the early 50s. And so we won't spend every episode, like a part of every episode, talking about this, but at some points, if I find it interesting enough, we'll do some parts of it. And so basically for the, especially for the Fellowship, it's going to be really interesting to see just how long it took Tolkien to actually develop like a plot to the story. Cause he was basically like, hey, we need the writers were, or I mean, the publishers were basically like, hey, we want a sequel. And he's like, yeah, I should do a sequel. That'd be good. I guess it has to be about hobbits. And they're like, yep. And so he goes for it, and so he really doesn't know what he's doing. And so this chapter, he even goes, like, he does a couple drafts of this, like, late 1937, just right away. Okay, and okay. So I thought it'd just be fun to, like, kind of just go through some of the details that were in there for these.
Certainly.
So this is the very first thing he writes of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, so this is, it's December 1937.
Okay.
Yeah, so in the first, so he writes a first draft of the story, and it's very short. It's probably only, like, 3 or 4 pages, really.
Okay.
But it's basically just Bilbo's 70th birthday. It goes straight into the party feast. He gives a speech. He says he's going to get married and is leaving after dinner. Then it's really confusingly written, if you ask me. But okay. Apparently he did use the ring to disappear, but, like, he skips, like, you know, he has, like, 2 paragraphs in there where he doesn't clearly state that.
Right.
Oh, okay, you know. But whatever, you got to read it. This is in volume 6 of Histories of Middle-earth. Mm-hmm. And then, but the story goes on, you know, because he explicitly states in there, he's like, well, this is going to be a story about one of his descendants, you know, because that was the whole problem with starting this was Bilbo at the end of The Hobbit was basically supposed to live happily ever after. So it's like, well, how am I going to do this? He can't, this is very hard to get around, you know? So it's like, well, I have to make this story about not Bilbo, you know, it's got to be about one of his descendants.
Right.
So the gifts giving scene was in here already. And, like, all those gifts were really ironic and funny. And, like, that goes all the way back to the original version. And some of them, most of them got edited, but, like, some of them are in the final version.
Mm-hmm.
In the second draft, Gandalf comes with, and, like, all the dwarf wagons and party supplies, like, that whole section gets added. And then the cool fireworks scene is added already in the second draft. So it's like, you know, what the excerpt that we read was, you know, there in basically 1937.
Right.
Which is kind of cool. And then... then he does a third draft, and these are all within, like, a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
Like, early 1938 at this point, like January maybe. And this one gets really different, and it's really weird. So it seems like he didn't even finish the second draft, but he just starts writing the third draft, and it's got basically a new story going on. So now, right, instead of the story starting off centered on Bilbo, it's on his son, Bingo. And it's Bingo's 72nd birthday party. All right, so when Bilbo was 71, he had gotten married to a hobbit on the other side of the Shire, and he had his 111th birthday party, and okay, he totally disappeared with his wife. All right. Okay. Like, right after that. And then Bingo, who's his son, and so this is, yes, so Frodo's original name was supposed to be Bingo. Bingo.
Interesting.
Bingo never went into... All right, this part, I don't even have to tell this part, but this was, like, a funny detail in there.
Yeah.
So they're like, Bingo never went into mourning for his parents because he didn't think them dead. When people would ask where they were, you know, because that was the obvious question that was going to come up, he just winked at them. Like, can you imagine, like, well, if your parents aren't dead, where are they? You just wink at them?
That's pretty funny.
Bingo hangs out with a lot of Tooks and Brandybucks. We already saw in this one that Frodo hung out with somebody called Mary Brandybuck. Gaffer Gamgee emerges. He was the one, you know, they're the gardeners for the Bagginses, but then he was also the one at the center of the gossip at the very beginning of the book. And then Bingo then takes over Bilbo's role for the rest of the chapter, which is, like, you know, he has his own birthday party, and then he disappears and he leaves labels for everything. And then he just straight up gives Bag End to the Saxville Bagginses, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
He's got a friend in there named Marmaduke Brandybuck.
Okay. And, Marmaduke.
Yeah, I know. And then this is the weirdest part of it all. So during that gift giving thing. You know, well, Bilbo obviously just left, you know, and beat it, and Frodo just managed giving away all the gifts. During that, Bingo is just invisible, hiding in a cupboard, and he just laughs at everything that he's hearing on the other side. Yeah. So then, once everybody leaves from all the gift giving stuff, he just has a couple cousins that were in on the plan, and they go off and start on whatever the adventure is going to be of the story.
But, right.
At that point in writing, Tolkien himself really didn't know what the story was supposed to be. Okay. He makes a fourth version still within this period of time, like this couple months, in like late 1937, early 1938. And so now Bingo now becomes Bingo Bolger Baggins. And he's now Bilbo's nephew, and Bilbo's no longer going to get married or anything. But the birthday party is now still Bingo's, so Bilbo would have run off, like, a while ago.
Okay.
And so the notes, the story is basically still kind of like that third version, where, yeah, Bingo is basically doing all of Bilbo's stuff. And so he leaves some notes behind about, like, where this story might be heading. I don't really want to go over the actual notes itself, because it might somehow be like a quasi spoiler, even though not really. But the thing to highlight is the ring, it's really not a major focus of the plot at all. It's just like kind of, I mean, you know, looking in hindsight, it's like, wow, it's kind of crazy. And he's going to write a long time before the ring becomes like a major focus of the plot. But conversely, the ring is starting to get like the aspects of what make it the ring, you know, like a really dangerous and powerful thing. Tolkien just, it, you know, as we go on, because we'll come back to this a couple of times, but it's like I don't think he sees it, that it's like, oh, it takes him a long time to see it. It's like, yeah, this should be the central part of it, you know. This is what the whole book plot should be revolved around.
Right.
Instead, he's just gonna have Bingo set out to try to find Bilbo wherever Bilbo went. And maybe the ring can help him do it. And so he writes, he's just jotting notes down, but he's like, the ring, whence its origin? Necromancer, question mark? Not very dangerous when used for good purpose, but it exacts its penalty. You must either lose it or yourself. So again, yeah, so like that's kind of the example of the ring's power taking shape a little bit there. Okay. There was this good quote in one of the letters from February 1938, and this is Tolkien writing to, I think, the publisher.
Okay.
They say it is the first step that costs the effort. I do not find it so. I am sure I could write unlimited first chapters. I have indeed written many. The Hobbit sequel is still where it was, and I have only the vaguest notions of how to proceed. Not ever intending any sequel, I fear I squandered all of my favorite motifs and the characters of the original on the original Hobbit. So I actually think, like, if you go over all these drafts, it's like, well, eventually he's going to write basically half the Fellowship, and then he's going to go back and redo it all, because it's like, all right, now I got my central plot, you know, to do this.
Right.
We're not going to go over that part, because, I mean, it's like, I've been talking enough here. But, I mean, I think that actually kind of explains, as you see, like, over the drafts, how scene by scene got added, that kind of makes sense a little bit more why Bilbo and Frodo never had a conversation scene.
Yeah.
Because eventually, obviously, he'll have to go back and make Bilbo his birthday party, and he's the central character. But he was thinking about even just starting off the story, like, Bilbo's already out of the picture, and
right, Frodo has the ring.
Bingo slash Frodo is going to be doing this. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of a cool window into his, like, thought process and composing these stories, throwing ideas out there.
Yeah, I like some of those. They're good to bring up. They're interesting to bring up, and it's it's funny. So we'll do that from time to time, I guess. Mostly when we don't have other stuff to talk about. we will not be doing it in the next chapter. Well, I'll just say a heads up too, like, because the next chapter's so big. First of all, we're gonna take forever on it. And second of all, this wasn't even in the original, like, draft thing. Like,
this chapter,
the next chapter coming up.
Okay.
Chapter two, he just has to come back to it. He starts writing half the book, and he just skipped this. The second chapter doesn't even exist entirely. Like, it just comes back. Like, in the reversion, he has to go and be like, all right, now we need a chapter here explaining basically what the ring is, because that's what we're going to find out next chapter. Spoiler.
Right.
But, yeah. But yeah, I think that's good. I think we can leave it there for today.
Cool. Sounds good.
Nice. All right. That was a good job. That was not too long. I'm happy.
I know. That was efficient.
All right, end of chapter one, Clifford. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
That was also far back. Morgan just sent me the picture. It looks really good.
Super sweet, good. Sweet.
How you been?
I've been good. Finally getting settled in San Francisco.
Ho-ho.
Yeah.
What's something random that's been happening for you?
There's wildfires here, which is a little scary. Very unfortunate for the people and land in the way of that, but luckily not throwing me off too much, just some smoke in the air, and yeah, it's on everyone's minds.
Yeah, that puts into perspective how insignificant the mouse in my house is right now.
Well,
that thing creeps me out, man.
I know the feeling.
All right, we got a 5-star review here that we got to read.
Okay, awesome.
This is from Colin656. Colin656, send an email to talkingtokenpodcast@gmail.com. Actually, you know, anybody can send an email to us if they got a question. Maybe we'll answer it. We probably won't if it's got like spoilers for the rest of the book, but you can always send questions to us. And then what's the other ones? At Tolkien Talking is the Twitter. And what's the Instagram?
The Instagram, I think, is just Talking Tolkien Podcast, all spelled out.
Yeah, nice. I got big plans I got to tell you about for the Instagram. It's going to be awesome. Man.
Okay.
Big plans. This is going to be good. Actually, we do have to talk about this offline after we do this. Okay. So, anyways, here's Colin656's review. Delightfully informative. This podcast's ability to leave lasting knowledge on listeners earns itself a 5-star rating. After I started listening to this podcast, I have found myself amazed by the detailed explanations of certain characters or events of The Hobbit. Patrick and Clifford are very well educated on everything about The Hobbit and LOTR. Nice job, dude. Nice job.
Sweet. All right. Very heartfelt.
Sounds good. Yeah. That's what you want, you know. Beer koozie right there. Beer koozie. That's everybody can do this. Everybody can do this. Do you have anything else? We could probably just end it there.
I don't think so.
Yeah, no point to really drag us out. All right, everybody have a good week. Thanks for listening. Have a good night.
Okay, stay tuned for chapter 2. Thanks, y'all.